Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Department of Gerontology here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, it's not exactly gerontology, but that'll do.
Okay.
I mean, this is George Carlin. He says, do you realize that the only time in our lives when we want to get old is when we're kids? If you're less than 10 years old, you're so excited about aging that you think in fractions. Someone says, how old are you? You say, I'm 4 1/2. You're never 36 and a half.
No.
You're 4 1/2 going on 5. That's the key, he says. You get into your teens, now they can't hold you back. You jump to the next number or even a few ahead. How old are you? I'm going to be 16. You could be only 13, but hey, you are going to be 16. And then the greatest day of your life, you become 21. Even the words sound like a ceremony. You become 21.
Yeah.
But then you turn 30. What happened there? Makes you sound like bad milk. You turned. He turned and we have to throw him away. That's no fun. And then you're pushing 40. He says, put on the brakes. It's all slipping away. Before you know it, you reach 50. And then all your dreams
like
are gone.
Some kind of a milestone.
Like a milestone. He says, at 50, all your dreams are gone. He says, but then you make it to 60. You didn't think you would, but you did. So you become 21. You turn 30. You push 40, you reach 50, and you make it to 60. Huh? Then you built up so much speed that you hit 70. Then after that, he said, it's day by day. You hit Wednesday. When you get into your 80s, every day is a complete cycle. You hit lunch, you turn 4:30, and you reach bedtime. And it doesn't end there. In the 90s, you start going backwards. I was just 92. Then a strange thing happens. If you make it over 100, you become a little kid again. I'm 100 1/2. Man, you become 21, you turn 30, you push 40, you reach 50, and you make it to 60.
What?
And you hit 70. Wow.
Which is, I'm hoping to make it someday, but an awful thing happened to me the other day.
What?
I don't know if I told you.
No.
I found myself doing something that I swore I would never do, but I did it almost unconsciously. My wife had bought a bottle of Welch's grape juice.
Oh, you did tell me this.
I did.
Yeah.
And I opened it up and I poured myself a glass and I said, ugh, too sweet. I watered it down.
My father, who was 93 when he died, he used to buy a half a gallon of apple juice.
Less than 6 months.
6 months. He would turn that half a gallon of apple juice into 24 gallons of juice.
Well, he was onto something, I'll tell you.
He was onto something. He was cheap, man. I think it was just cheap.
No, I think it was too sweet. It had nothing to do with what it cost. It was just too sweet.
There was that, too, because he lost his sweet tooth when he got really, really
old. He lost all his teeth, as a matter of fact. But he single-handedly almost put Mott's out of business. Anyway, if you have a question about your car or anything else, or where you just might be, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm Megan from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, Megan from Atlanta, Georgia. How are you?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I have a 92 Toyota Corolla. And I took it to my mechanic, and I've been going to him about 6 months or so, and I'm not sure if I can trust him.
We are.
Does he have a boat? There's an ocean there in Atlanta, isn't there?
Far away.
Yeah.
Well,
you can trust him then.
Well, he works kind of for himself, kind of in like a backyard situation.
Don't we all?
Under the shade of a tree?
Yes.
Okay.
And anyway, he told me that my CV joints were dirty and that he needed to boot them. Otherwise, my axle would go bad.
Reboot is more like it.
Reboot them, yeah.
Yeah, he had to shut the car down and then restart.
Does he work for Microsoft?
So they were dirty, and did he determine that the boots, in fact, were torn?
Yeah,
did he say
evidently.
That?
That's what it sounds
he
like.
He didn't say anything like that to me.
But he said that he needed to reboot them.
Yes.
And that would mean that the boots, which are covering up the grease of the CV joint, are torn or broken, and dirt is getting in, and he wants to replace the boots.
Right.
Yeah.
and you don't believe them.
Well,
sounds bogus to you.
Well, sort of, because I work downtown and I park on the street, and when I leave at night, instead of going all the way down, I just make a U-turn. It's a really sharp turn, and my car makes a clicking noise.
Oh, how unfortunate.
Jeez. Now, see, you were questioning whether you should trust this guy.
Right.
And the truth of the matter is, you could trust him, and it's too late.
Yeah, when he first told you of the condition, which may have been months ago.
Right.
You should have done something about it.
I told him to go ahead and replace to do it.
Oh, he did
yes.
it?
Yes.
Oh, it was too late then. He found it too late.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because what you're hearing is the noise from the constant velocity or CV joint.
When the joint wears out, it will make this clicking noise, especially when you make sharp turns.
Right.
And it's exacerbated by a turn through which you're accelerating. For example, if you were stopped at a dead stop and you cranked the wheel all the way to the right.
Right.
And you took off.
Which is,
you would get a click, 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 click out of the left front wheel.
Which is what it's doing.
So you need to replace that joint. But the good news is you've already spent the money on the boot. That's the good news for him.
That's good. Yeah, that's good because he's going to replace him again.
Well, and I would just wait until the noise gets a lot worse. I don't think you're in any imminent danger.
Okay.
Wait a minute. You're always advising people, why wait? Why wait? Fix it right now. Why worry about it? You're going to spend the money anyway. That's what you're always telling people.
I was trying to allay her fears.
How do you know that she doesn't want to just run out and spend a few hundred bucks?
I don't have a few hundred.
Then wait.
You should wait.
Okay.
Yeah. On the other hand, you can go back to him and say, gee, you know, you put that boot on, but now I need an axle. And, you know, now if I buy an axle, I'm going to get a new boot with it. And I feel like I've thrown the money away on the boot that you just did. So can you cut me a deal?
Right, because he charged me $300.
To do both boots?
Yes.
Some tree.
$300.
Some tree he's working under.
Oh.
I need a tree like this.
It's a big tree.
Well, he may have to hold the car up with one hand while he does it. So that
he's probably got a rope over.
That may explain the high cost. So I would go back and ask him to cut you some kind of a deal.
Okay.
Yeah.
See you, Megan. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm calling from Oakland, California.
With two A's?
With two A's, and an R, and an O, and an
A. Yeah, we got that part.
So, Aaron, what's up?
Well, I drive an 89 Ford Probe, and...
Are you a proctologist? Never mind.
A couple of weeks ago, it started to mist. So I hit the little mist thing on my windshield wipers, and they did their thing, and I was able to drive on, but then it started to rain a little bit heavier, so I turned it on to intermittent.
Yeah.
And then I went into a tunnel where there was no rain, so I turned them off.
Mm-hmm.
And in the tunnel, they went to lie down like they always do when you turn them off.
Right.
And then as soon as they got into position, they stood straight up and pointed at the ceiling of the tunnel, and they've pointed that way ever since. Except when they're on, when they do what you hope that they'll do. Then you turn them off, they lie down for a second, and then they point straight up again.
Magnets.
Great.
Magnets.
Yeah.
And there's no place, no matter where you stop them, they now park straight up as opposed to
after lie. First going to the real park position. Then they
Right.
It's as though they're a football referee saying, field goal.
Right.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
Well, you probably need a new wiper motor, Aaron.
A new wiper motor.
Yeah, because I think that's what's screwed up.
Jeez, but it would be fun to try to fix it, wouldn't it?
Well, you can try.
How would you go about trying?
You'd replace the wiper motor. No, I wouldn't know how
to fix
it.
We would not.
I mean, there is a possibility that it's not the motor, that there's some kind of a controller for the wipers. Some cars do have that, and you may very well, in fact, have one of those. So if you're going to do this yourself, you run the risk of buying the wrong part. The only solution to your problem, if you wanted to solve it, you could unplug the wiper motor. You'd have to do this while you were driving the car.
Well, yeah. That sounds plausible.
Could do this. You could, like, drill a hole through the windshield. You could stick your hand through it.
I'm just going to take off the door and hang out the side.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
That would be good. See, the thing is, you do need a new wiper motor, probably, but... If you knew how to do it, all you would need is to go to Radio Shack and buy
a toggle switch
or a capacitor. and that would probably fix it. But who knows where, where it is.
No, you'd probably,
there's no way to do
it. You'd set the car on fire, too.
Unless you wanted to play around endlessly. And you can do that.
But I would, you know, if you don't have the shop manual for the car, you know, in a diagnostic chart, then I would go ahead and take it someplace because you're apt to replace the wrong piece. If you want to be daring, just go and buy yourself a wiper motor and put it in because that's probably what's wrong with it.
Okay.
Okay, but don't blame us when you're on Stump the Chumps next week and you hear the music.
I certainly wouldn't blame you.
All right. See you, Aaron.
Thanks.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's
a strange little problem. No, I've never seen windshield wipers
do that. Oh, no, I see it all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
This reminds me of some, never mind.
1-888-CAR-TALK, that's 888-22-7825-5. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Victoria in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Victoria.
Do you go by Victoria? Or
I do.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
And you're from Raleigh?
Well, now I am, yeah.
Oh, where were you from?
I was born in Wisconsin, but raised in New York.
Oh,
wow.
So what's going on?
You've gone through weather and cultural changes in your life, huh?
Well, I actually moved here from San Francisco, so.
Man.
Really?
Well, you know, you want to see the country, right?
Yeah, but you...
You don't have to move there.
Yeah, most people go on vacation. They spend like 2 weeks, they come home.
Well, you got to feel the cultural impact.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, you certainly have done that. Yeah. Anyway, what's on your mind, Victoria?
Well, I'm actually calling for my mother, who lives in Augusta, Georgia.
She's every place today.
And she has hit 76.
She hit 76?
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
She recently had a hip replacement. So they've told her that she has to get a new car because she's got a cherry red 99 Chevy Camaro.
And she does.
She does. This is some hip mother.
Yeah. Well, she's kind of go granny.
Yeah.
And she needs a car that sits higher than this. So I have, because I am the good daughter in the family.
Yeah.
I get to go down and help her pick out the new car.
So she needs something where she can sit up straighter rather than have her legs be extended underneath.
Right.
Like they are in the Camaro.
Uh-huh.
I'd recommend a Miata.
She's... Well, you know, she says with the Camaro that she gets all these truck drivers looking at her and honking at her, and then they come up even with her, and she thinks they
flashes them that blue hair. Oh, God.
Well, this is a tough problem, actually, because the kinds of vehicles that have seats that are more like the chair you sit on at your kitchen table are vehicles that she might not be able to get into.
Well, something like a Subaru Forester might be all right. I'll tell you, the easiest car that I've ever gotten into is my Colt Vista because the seat is exactly the same height
as
my butt. So you open the door, and even if you trip and fall, you all end up behind the wheel.
How high is your butt?
Well, geez, I don't know. It's
stand up.
Depends. Well, it's moved of late.
You have butt sag?
But, oh, yeah. Yeah, never mind.
Never mind. We don't go there.
But she's going to have to try cars. And I'm going to recommend, how tall is Mom?
She's short. She used to be 5'2", but she's kind of shrinking.
Well, the Miata may work then. But I think the Forester is a good...
I think I like the idea. The Forester is a nice size.
But she's got to try. I mean, you just can't go and buy her a car and hand her the key. She's got to go. So you've got to take her around to a bunch of dealerships, and she's going to say, oh, this one is very easy to get in and out of. And it's going to be, and if you're sitting straight up, it's going to be more comfortable for her than lying down like she does in her Camaro.
Yeah.
You must have a strip there in Raleigh where there's like one car dealership after another.
Well, yeah. You know, every town has.
Exactly.
Well, let's give her a couple of options at least. I mean, I think the Subaru Forester is one.
The Honda CRV, but I think that's higher. But that may be okay. But she's short,
right?
I wonder how something like a Crown Vic would be.
I don't think she wants something really big.
She wants doesn't
a smaller car.
Smaller.
Yeah, Toyota Matrix. Does she care if it's Japanese or American?
Well, originally she told us she wanted to only buy American, but then my sisters and I explained to her about multinational corporations.
You mean the evil sisters and yourself?
Yes,
right.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, I don't care. You girls pick.
Okay, in which case the Toyota makes a thing called a Matrix. That's one. So you want to go to a Toyota dealer, a Subaru dealer. Let's just go run down a Ford.
And the Ford Focus might be all right.
The Ford Focus. So a Ford dealer, a Subaru dealer, Toyota dealer.
Yeah, I mean.
Start with them.
And call us back next week if she complains a lot.
Well, you know you're getting a call then. All
right. See you, Victoria.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Okay, look, it's time to visit, or maybe I should say revisit the bogosity department.
What? We have time for another call before the break?
No, this is the Department of Puzzler Bogosity.
Ah.
I think I warned you last week that this puzzler was a little bit on the lame side.
Yeah, but you say that every week. Oh, no, wait. We say that every week.
Well, anyway, this is from my Surprisingly Intelligent Scan Tool series, and I'll have the puzzler and the answer in just a minute, so don't go anywhere.
We used to drive Plymouths and Chevys from Chrysler and GMC. The Mustang was pretty heavy stuff, but the old's too big for me. It was getting back Cadillac, what's the word, Thunderbird, used to go real far. And now the Jeep seems cheap, and I'm bored with a Ford. I gotta have a foreign car in my Mercedes. I meet the ladies, they'll all call me honey. And if a Rolls Royce is my first choice, and what the heck? It's only money if you're driving a Lincoln with the Continental name on back. It's time to change your thinking, boys. Well, it's time to change your tack. You know, it's just not smart to drive a Dodge Dart at this upscale seminar. So Detroit, oh, why, I'm gonna be a star. I gotta have a foreign car.
And even though the Trans-Siberian Orchestra votes to return home immediately whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
Mm,
and
yeah.
this was, as I, you know, I've neglected the automotive interest, so to speak, in the puzzler. We got a lot of complaints from people who said, you don't have any automotive puzzlers, so.
We should have a few because the show is called what?
Car Talk.
Car
so
Talk.
This is one.
Yeah.
We have in our shop a device which is called a scan tool. And ours is made by Snap-on, and it's a wonderful thing, and I suppose most shops have such a device. Anyway, you take this scan tool, and you connect it to usually a plug under the dashboard or under the hood, and it extracts valuable information from the car's computer.
Yeah.
It scans or downloads.
Yeah, it's like
and
looking
once,
at the cookies.
Exactly. And once we get that information, then we can accurately misdiagnose a whole range of problems.
Right.
And, well, recently we got a new piece of software for our scan tool, and one of the guys plugged it in, and he starts scrolling through all the data, looking for readings that are out of the normal range. For example, it might say that the engine operating temperature is minus 40 degrees, and that might give you an idea that something's wrong with the coolant temp sensor.
Mm-hmm.
Or you forgot to pay the heating bill at the garage or something like that. Anyway, as this fellow's scrolling down looking through all this information, I was looking over his shoulder, and he comes to a thing that says, tire pressure low, right front. And he says, huh? So I walk around to the right front, and sure enough, looks pretty low. It's almost flat. And I say, geez, it's right. And he says, how does this thing know? There's no air pressure monitor in this car. And that's the question. How did the scanner
know?
Now, we all know that when a tire loses its air, mm-hmm. it gets smaller.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you ever come out of a party at 3 o'clock in the morning and notice your car listing to one side, you know you have a flat tire. And the reason it's listing is that tire's diameter is smaller than
of course.
The other ones, right? Because it doesn't have the right
air
pressure.
Right.
And if your car had a device that could measure how much the car was tilting, It could, in fact, tell you if it was tilting towards the right front. It could tell you, in fact, that it was the right front tire that was low. But unfortunately,
it doesn't
have such a device. That would do it.
But that ain't it.
But when a
See, I question this answer. But go ahead.
No, no, the answer.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
But when a tire loses air pressure and its diameter gets smaller, when the car is going down the road, in order for that tire to keep up with all the others and not get left behind, because you know,
otherwise the right front tire will be on the right rear.
It has to turn faster.
Yeah.
And your car does have something that is constantly monitoring the speed of all the wheels and comparing them to one another.
Yes.
And what your car has, most modern cars at least have,
ABS,
anti-lock brakes. And there's a sensor at every wheel that's reading how fast each of the wheels is going on average.
Mm-hmm.
So if it notes that the right front wheel is going a heck of a lot faster than the other wheels, it can either assume that you're making a lot of left-hand turns or driving around a circle, or that your right front tire is going flat.
Wow.
How do I register on the Bogosity scale?
Well.
Never mind. Who's our winner?
Okay. The winner is Gene Sager from Wessington, South Dakota. And for having her correct answer chosen at random from the garbage bag full of correct answers that we got.
And as soon as they chisel her out of the ice.
Yeah. If they can chisel her out of the ice, she's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division. And with that gift certificate, Gene, you go and pick out anything you want as long as it's on the cheap side. Yeah.
Boy, we're real big spenders. Anyway, we will have a brand new puzzler from the realm of space travel coming up in the third half of the show. So it's not from my space travel series because I don't actually have a space travel series.
This could be the beginning.
This could be the initial one. Anyway, but stay tuned. Right now, if you have a question about your car, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Oh, hello. This is Isaac from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hi, Isaac. What's going on, man?
Not much. I've got an 89 Mazda 323, and I changed the starter. To tell you how mechanically inclined I am, I actually bought tools that morning to actually change it.
That's pretty courageous of you, actually.
That's a good way to start. You know, that's how you buy tools. You have to have a use for them. So what did you buy, actually? Like ratchet sets and stuff like that?
Yeah, ratchet sets and wrenches.
So you had none of that?
No, I had nothing.
Yeah. Oh, great.
I had a hammer.
Well, that actually sometimes works on starters.
You could write a song about that, actually. So you went out and bought the starter motor. You bought $200 worth of tools, and you saved 16 cents doing this job yourself. But now you have the tools.
Now I have the tools.
And did it work?
Well, I put it in. There were some parts left over after I got it in.
Was one of them the starter motor?
No, they were. I don't know. They were brackets. There's some sort of
brackets. Yeah, those are overrated.
Okay, good, because I didn't put them in. I couldn't find out where they went. But after I did, the car sputters now. Every time I'm in first gear or whenever I go into second gear or third gear, it kind of sputters. But once I get going, it kind of gets going again. I don't know what's going on.
And it does it all the time?
It does it all the time.
How long has the starter been in there?
4 days.
And it's been sputtering the whole time?
The whole time.
How long did it take you to do the job?
All day.
All day.
It's got a lot more bolts than I thought. The starter looked like it had 3 bolts, and it had like 20 or so. I don't know, it had a lot.
Yeah, it's got 3. You just took out 17 bolts and you didn't have
you
to.
Didn't have to take out.
And I'm guessing that in the commission of this job, that you took out maybe some bolts that you didn't have to, and you maybe disconnected some vacuum hoses that you shouldn't have, or maybe things that were in the way. I'm surprised that you didn't enlist the assistance of a friend to at least, you know, stand over you and give you words of encouragement. Like,
it always helps to have someone else looking, at least, so that when you forget to do something, the other person's got a shot at remembering it, or vice versa.
It's like, you know, when you go to the gym and you're lifting heavy weights, you have a spotter, okay? And you need a spotter if you're working on cars because someone might say, "Don't loosen that bolt! Are you crazy?" Or someone can call 911 if you're there twitching on the ground from, you know. But maybe for the next job you'll have somebody there. But I think at this point,
I'm selling my tools.
No. You have to be ready to take this kind of abuse.
Yeah, you've got the tools now, and don't forget. I mean, even Columbus turned back on the first trip.
He did.
You didn't?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he went for like 3 days and came back and said, I ain't going.
What are you guys, crazy?
And they said, we have no place to park the ships. You got to go. But you've got to just, you know, it's like falling off a bicycle. You got to get right back on. And I think you should go tomorrow.
Of course.
And take the cylinder head off the car just for yucks. I mean, do something big and bold.
Yeah.
You know, and prove to yourself that you can do this.
Yeah, but you understand, putting the starter in itself had nothing to do with how the engine runs.
Okay.
Right. And the fact that the starter works.
That's wonderful.
It's remarkable.
You've got to give yourself credit for that.
So you didn't do anything wrong insofar as putting the starter in, but you may have knocked off a vacuum hose or when the engine idles, when you stopped at a light, does it idle smoothly?
No.
Ah. It doesn't. It's almost definitely a vacuum hose.
And, okay. it used to idle smoothly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
here's what you got to do. You need the spotter now. The spotter has to come, and the two of you have to, with the engine running and the hood open, you have to kind of look around and listen around and see if you hear any hissing noises or if you see any sparks jumping or something that just looks out of place. You won't know what that thing is, but when you find it, you'll know that there's something wrong, and maybe, just maybe, you'll find out where that missing vacuum hose connects. Or maybe you'll find out you've crossed the spark plug wire or some such thing, and you'll make the thing run right, and then you'll really feel proud. I mean, you could take it someplace, and in 5 minutes they'll fix it, but part of learning to fix your own car is learning from your mistakes and making mistakes and then rectifying them, and you'll feel a sense of pride when you hook up that hose and the thing starts running smooth, and you say, I knew I could do it. I didn't have to call those knuckleheads. Good luck, man.
Thank you very much.
Good
Isaac.
Luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888. He'll never get it to run again. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Mary Ellen from Glen Rock, New Jersey.
Mary Ellen.
Mary, with a hyphen.
No kidding.
Oh, so
I like
geez,
it.
You know, but how do you rate a hyphen? What is that?
My mother's name was Mary. And she wanted me not to be called Mary, but to be called Mary Ellen.
Oh, so Ellen is not your middle name. Your first name is Mary Ellen.
My first name is Mary hyphen Ellen.
Mary hyphen Ellen.
Yeah, excellent.
So we can call you M.E.
M.E. A lot of people do that, too.
Okay, M.E.
I have a bet with a coworker, and it's a big bet, so we're going to use you as the people who are going to give us the definitive answer.
Okay.
Obviously, in the interest of fairness,
we don't want to know.
We can't know which side you're on.
Oh, okay. Okay. You'll be like Solomon. I'll just give you the facts.
Just give us the facts. Okay. We'll be like Jack Webb in Dragnet. Just
okay,
the facts,
good,
ma'am.
Good. Okay. I park my car on a very steep incline at work, and I call it the gulch.
Yeah.
It's like very much, you know, not just a little incline, but a pretty major incline.
Yeah.
And my coworker, Mira, said to me, Mary Ellen, if you park every day on that incline, you're going to ruin your brakes or use them up quicker than if you park on a flat surface.
Unfortunately, you divulged who had
divulged. I did divulge, didn't I?
You did. You divulged.
Okay, but
Mira is crazy. She's got nothing.
Nothing
on her side. That's
yeah,
it.
No, you're not going to wear the brakes out. The only time you wear the brakes out is when you're trying to stop a moving car.
Okay.
So
once you've already stopped, you've already done whatever you're going to do.
Right. So you apply the handbrake, but you're also leaving the car in gear. Is it a stick shift?
No, it's an automatic.
So
and
it's
but
in
I
park.
Do put on the handbrake.
Oh yeah, no, sure. it's a wise. So why have you been relegated to the gulch? How low down are you on the totem pole?
First in, first out.
I arrive first,
so I get the gulch parking space.
Arrive, but you can get right out.
Exactly. So now you want to know what my bet was?
Yeah.
A whole box of donuts that you're bringing into the office. So you saved me the cost of a box of donuts.
But you're going to have
Send
to eat
me
the
a couple,
donuts.
Will you?
I'm not going to eat all of them. I'm going to share them, but she is providing them.
Yeah, well, tell your girlfriend that she's wacko.
Got it.
See
you,
Emmy.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take
Thanks
care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Yeah, this is Hans from Chicago.
Hans.
Yeah.
How are you, Hans?
Not too bad, fun old man.
Oh.
And I have a question that goes all the way back to World War II.
Yeah.
We were fleeing from the Russians on an Opel Blitz truck.
Yeah.
And that thing ran on wood.
Really?
On wood chips, yeah. I know everybody that I asked this question was laughing.
All right.
But that's the way it was. I mean, we didn't need any gasoline or anything. Just pull up in a lumber yard and load it up with wood chips, and off we go.
Did Doug Berman put you up to this?
Wood chips, eh?
Yeah.
No, are you fun? Are you funning us, Hans?
No, I'm not.
You're
and
not.
I remember now that a lot of, like, regular sedans, you know, they took the trunk lid out and put one of these big, all about the size of two 55-gallon drums.
Yeah.
Welded together, and they filled it up on top with wood chips and had a little flap on the side that I was only 10 or 11 years old then.
Well, one of two things is happening. Either they were burning the wood chips to make fire that would ultimately boil water for steam.
No, it was not steam.
Or it was somehow using the gases from the wood chips to get methane.
You know, what little I remember out of my chemistry classes, I think what they did, they probably created...
Alcohol.
No, carbon dioxide.
Yeah, but that doesn't work.
And fed that into the engine and then burned it.
Well, you...
And I mean, you have no recollection of where this wood went or what the engine looked like.
No, it was a regular gasoline engine.
It was a regular gasoline engine that they somehow converted?
Yeah. I remember it had a big oval tank in front of the underneath the front bumper, and once in a while they used to open up the side of it and just scraped out a lot of soot and stuff.
Wow.
But somehow or another, they must have, you know how they make coke from coal?
Right.
You know, you heat that up, and you create gas. What kind of gas do you get when you do that?
Right. You create nothing.
Nothing, huh?
You create carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and things don't... That doesn't make a car run.
And they had these potato sacks that they filled up at the lumber yard.
With wood chips. Wood chips, eh?
Yeah.
Or sawdust, even sawdust?
Sawdust, too, you know, but they didn't want to just use plain sawdust. And I remember this little opening on the side about maybe 2.5-inch round hole with a piece of, with a flap on it, and that would just flap around and let air in, and then when the suction got too high, it would just shut it off.
What have you been doing the last 60 years, Hans?
I've been drinking a lot.
Well,
wood alcohol.
We have no idea.
You know, and I thought you were, you know, I've talked to so many people, and nobody seems to...
Yeah, I think somehow or another, it was just changing. It's doing something with the wood.
Right.
And making alcohol or some such thing.
You think so, huh?
I have no idea, really. I'm trying to get rid of you.
Maybe we have among our listeners some old Luftwaffe pilots that they...
I know they didn't fly planes with that system.
I mean, no.
Maybe they'll call us and explain to us
what
this was, because I don't have any idea.
I don't even know whether you can burn... under pressure, carbon dioxide, you know?
No, you can't.
You can't.
No, and you can't very easily burn wood chips in an internal combustion engine either.
No.
So, I mean, the only thing that would happen is, as my brother says, converting something into an alcohol.
Well, the very first internal combustion engine, which was invented by a German named Nicholas Otto.
Otto, yeah.
Actually burned coal dust.
Yeah.
Because the engine was invented before there was gasoline. And the way the thing worked is pulverized coal was injected into the cylinder.
Yeah.
And that was ignited by a spark. And so it may be that they were doing something akin to that.
Yeah, but you could explain that if it were sawdust.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
but not wood chips.
Well, they wanted to make their own dust. I don't know.
Well, if anyone does know, either call us or send us an email from our website. Can't talk
and Hans, try to stay off the sauce, will you? See you later.
Sure. Have a good one.
Thanks for the whole idea.
Sure, great.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
That's pretty good. Wood chips.
I've heard it all now. Hey, listen. Listen carefully, because what's coming up next is going to require your utmost concentration.
Yeah?
Mental agility.
Yeah.
Mathematical skill.
Yeah.
and a working knowledge of fluid dynamics.
Ooh, sounds like a great puzzler.
Puzzler? I'm sending you to get coffee for the staff.
Oh, we'll be back with more of your calls and a brand new puzzler as soon as I get back with the coffees. Stay tuned.
I need to get out of line before I blow my mind. Working for gas, babe. Working for gas. Forgot to fill up Sunday. Now the price has really climbed. Working for gas, babe. Working for gas. This is my last $5. I got 2 gallons left. I'm just working for gas, babe. Working for gas.
And even though Ira Glass starts working on This American Resignation, whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Ha, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and, of course, the new puzzler.
And I'm going to commit this to memory as you say it.
You are, eh? Well, let's see how you do,
okay,
buddy boy.
Man.
As I promised, this is from the wonderful world of space travel.
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of. And this is for all the school kids out there, and their parents, too, of course, but mainly the school kids who have been subjected to our show by their parents, you know, for all these years.
Like my kids.
Worse. And forced to listen. And I realize that kids are, you know, just coming off their Christmas vacation where their little minds have been idled.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that this would help to
get them back into the swing of things.
Get them back into the swing of things.
Excellent.
And the nice thing about this puzzle is it's brief. See that? It's only one measly little
With obfuscations?
Requires none. And it's only one measly little paragraph, and it was sent in by Dave Foster. And I have no idea where Dave is from, but if anyone wants his email address, I'd be happy to give it up. And I had to obfuscate maybe a little bit. But
sure.
Maybe,
of course.
Here it is. In the early 60s, NASA was sending some electronic gear into outer space on unmanned missions. I mean, they'd already sent a guy into space, you know, but they wanted to make sure that if they were going to send people up for longer flights, that they had kind of a chance of surviving, you know.
Yeah.
So they were sending this electronic gear up to test a bunch of different things, radiation exposure and the like. Anyway, the equipment kept failing, but they couldn't figure out why. Finally, somebody determined that the circuits were overheating. So they installed a fan to cool down the devices. The problems persisted. Why? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a pair of 179-centimeter single-camber carbide steel black diamond telebar skis with dual torsion bow, densolite core, and electro-sintered graphite base. And don't forget the bindings, and send all that to Puzzlet Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But right now, give us a call if you have a question. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Bryony in Gunnison, Colorado.
Bryony?
Like,
yes.
In deep?
No, B-R-I-O-N-Y.
Oh, Bryony.
Bryony.
Yeah, Bryony. It's a botanical name.
Botanical? What does it mean?
Well, it's a wildflower or a wild weed, whichever way you want to look at it.
Oh, wonderful.
The wild Bryony.
That's it.
Where are you from?
Oh, well, I grew up in England, but I live in Gunnison, Colorado.
So were your parents botanists?
No.
Or were they
no.
just crazy?
Just crazy, I think.
You've been here a long time, though.
17 years, yes.
Gee, you've pretty much lost your accent, haven't you?
Yeah, more or less. I'm going back for a top-up this summer, but...
Yeah.
So anyway, what's on your mind?
Well, I have an 87 Subaru wagon that I bought from my brother, and it started to howl, and so I've had a few suggestions from friends as to what it might be, but I thought you guys could probably figure it out for me.
Yeah, well, tell us the circumstances under which
it
howls.
It, when it's cold in the morning, that's the only thing. And it howls like a dog.
Does the car have to be moving?
It's moving, yes. It's usually when it gets to about 58 miles an hour.
And does it sound like this?
No, it's more like ow, ow, ow.
Oh, intermittent like that? Ow, ow.
Yeah, it doesn't always. Sometimes it's got better. It's starting to sustain and hold that note, you know?
And it doesn't. Does the pitch of the sound seem to change as you speed up?
Not really.
Well, do you speed up ever?
No, you yeah, I kind of slow down.
You kind of slow down. And when you do, when you get below 58, it actually just...
It'll just disappear. It just stops.
Immediately disappears.
Yeah, it just kind of goes away.
Then it's not what I think both of us thought it was.
What did you think it was?
I thought it was a differential.
Really?
But it's not. I take it back. That's why I didn't say it. I don't have to take it back.
You just said it.
I had someone look at the alternator, and they said that was fine, so it's not that.
Can you tell what part of the car it's coming from?
The engine. It's coming from the...
It's coming from the front.
I think so, yeah.
But are you sure? But I'm going to ask a question that you may not be able to answer, but when we fail to provide you with an adequate answer today, this may help the next person.
Okay.
So I just want to prepare you for the worst.
Oh, no.
Will it make the noise, or can you get it to make the noise, if you sit there at a stop and just rev the engine up to the speed at which it would be going if you were doing 58
right.
miles an hour?
We tried that, and it does not do that, no.
That's
and it doesn't do it when it's warm either. It's only when it's cold.
That's
okay. We gotta run through the list of things that could make a noise like this.
I want you to know, we're working on this very hard.
Okay.
and this effort represents our combined intellect, which some have compared.
Then you should get it right.
Which some have compared to that of a two-car garage
door
opener.
No, that's got some smarts in it. it's interesting that it comes and goes so abruptly at exactly 58 miles an hour.
Well, sometimes it'll do it lower if it's really cold.
Geez, you know, I had a car
really
once in the
cold.
Shop. That my brother may remember this. This car drove us crazy.
Is this the one you strapped me to the hood and we drove around the block?
Bingo.
I don't think my husband's going to go for that.
Who said, I went for it.
Well, who said he's going to get strapped to the hood? But, no, it had a similar kind of noise. You get to like 45 miles an hour and you got this woo, 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 woo. And what it turned out to be, oddly enough, was the roof rack making noise.
Oh.
And what had happened was this thing had little plastic covers on the end. Basically, they were rectangular aluminum tubes. And it had little plastic covers on the ends of the tubes, and one of them had come off. And it was the equivalent of blowing
of a
over
clarinet.
Of blowing over the top of a soda pop bottle.
Huh.
And that's the kind of noise it would make. And then if you went faster or slower, it would go away. And I just happened to be driving the thing, and I reached out the window to put my hand, you know, as guys tend to do, up and reach up. I don't know why I was. Why was I doing that?
I don't know.
And
I was strapped to the hood.
I was feeling for you. You're there. You're still there. And I felt the thing vibrating. And I stuck a rag in it, and that fixed it. Anyway.
Well, I have to say that I like that because that would certainly explain the abruptness.
Yeah, here's the only...
See,
I have a problem with this one.
Yeah, well, I'm having problems with all of the other solutions because they involve stuff that's turning, and stuff that's turning typically doesn't suddenly make noise at a given speed.
Mm.
It makes a noise which increases in either volume or pitch when you reach some speed.
Well, I'm gonna make you one more suggestion, may do it. You have a roof rack, though, huh?
Yeah, it's got the basic thing that they
Subarus have. I don't think it's that.
Because
that wouldn't explain the cold.
No.
Right.
One thing that would explain the cold is a bad speedometer cable.
Ooh.
Ooh, you know. Now you mentioned that.
Uh-huh.
One time when the needle kind of went crazy.
It bounced?
Yes.
Oh!
It went.
Frank!
Oh, I've forgotten that. That just happened.
You're
one
a
time.
Bleeding gene!
I'm hiding a clue from you guys.
It could be that. And the easy thing to do is to disconnect the speedometer at the transmission. It's very easy to do. There's a cable with a little rubber boot over it and a clip. You pull the clip out, and you'll pull the cable right out of the transmission.
Okay.
And you'll no longer have a speedometer, but you'll no longer have the source of the noise, perhaps, either.
And then if I get pulled over for speeding, I tell you, you guys told me to do it, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, you won't know when you're doing 58 miles an hour. So just floor it.
No, but you'll know if it's fixed.
Oh, okay.
Let us know what happens.
All right. I'll do that.
See you, Briny.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Hi. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is David Kobler calling you guys from Ypsilanti.
Hi,
okay,
David.
No last names, please.
That's all right. Oh. Too late now.
Well, that was a fake last name.
We knew that.
Okay.
What's right. going on, David?
Well, I have a car mystery that has been plaguing our family, and we're hoping that you guys can help us out.
Oh.
My mom has a 2003 Honda Civic, and she was taking into work a bowl, a 3-pound bag of Hershey's Kisses that were in a bowl on the passenger side seat. So she parked the car in the garage for the night, shut the garage door, went out the next morning. The bowl is empty, but still in its place on the passenger seat.
Yeah.
So she thought, you know, maybe my brother-in-law, her son-in-law, had eaten them,
yeah.
You know, or something along those lines. 2 days later, the car starts to smell like you are inside of a Hershey's Kiss.
Really?
So she starts searching the car, searches the footwells, searches the spare tire well, searches the dashboard. No signs of chocolate, no signs of foil. This about 2 weeks goes by, can't find anything, tells my dad.
Yeah.
Searches, he says, that's ridiculous. It's got to be out there. He searches the whole car, looks into the air filter area, can't find anything. I do the same thing, can't find anything. And then about a week and a half after that, I start seeing little flecks of foil coming through the air vents and little Hershey's Kisses flags waving through the defrost vents.
Yeah, well, you know, it doesn't take much to melt chocolate. If you've ever left a chocolate bar in your pocket,
right.
98.6 degrees is enough to turn a chocolate bar into liquid.
Absolutely.
So these mice... who stole the chocolate.
Yeah,
and that's what.
Let's get down to that right
yeah,
away.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. They decided to store it where they were living.
Yeah.
And more than that, they probably ate. They must have had a party that night.
Oh, man. You can hear someone say, guys, you're not going to believe this.
So you've got some really fat mice now, and they're probably stuck in there, too.
So you think it's a matter of it was a rodent problem? Even though we can't find any droppings or anything like that.
When you do, it's going to be ugly. But
yeah. You should never leave food in the car overnight. Never.
You should never leave food where your son-in-law can find it.
Because that's a nightmare. You know that what's going to happen. It's not going to just disappear.
Well, these mice obviously took one at a time.
Yeah.
They must have worked round the clock. How many kisses do you think were in the bowl?
It was a 3-pound bag.
What's that? So that's going to be like a couple of hundred maybe.
Yeah.
Just imagine how many mice must have been. They must have had to call their buddies.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it have been interesting to be able to look in there all night?
Well, here's what you should do.
Okay.
You should camera.
Reenact it. And exactly.
Exactly. You'll see exactly where they go.
You need an infrared camera. So
okay.
Here's what you do. You've got to go down to the, in Ypsilanti, you must have one of those places that sells Army surplus stuff.
There you go.
For about $2,500 or so, you can get one of these infrared cameras. And then set the thing up and you...
And put another bowl full of the kisses there.
Okay.
Wouldn't it be fun to watch them do it?
That's going to be great.
And to find out how many mice are involved? This is like going to be a mouse army.
It could be an entire battalion.
It's going to be
there.
A battalion. It might be a division of mice.
But the thing is, you'll be able to see exactly where they come from,
mm-hmm.
how they carry them out, and where they bring them.
But the question is now, how do you get the rest of the chocolate out of there? It's a nightmare because someone is going to have to take down the entire heating system.
It ain't
really.
And this ain't not easy.
This ain't going to be easy.
So there's no possibility that this was a practical joke where somebody opened up the
I don't think so. No.
This is a mouse situation, absolutely.
And a practical joker would have left one behind. We had a caller many years ago who had a 50-pound bag of dog food, dog food, in his truck.
Uh-huh.
And he noticed after one weekend or something, I don't remember all the details, but the dog food was gone.
Uh-huh.
And his truck had been locked up, and he couldn't imagine where it was. Well, where it was the mice that took it one piece at a time, and they must have been busy mice that weekend. They put it in the headliner of his truck, you know, which is that piece of cloth.
Right.
And I think he was driving along and he hit the brakes and 25 pounds of dog food came out on his head.
Uh-huh.
So unfortunately, they didn't put it in the headliner of the Civic. That would have been easier to deal with. This is going to cost a few hundred bucks.
Really?
This is in the ductwork And it's probably
of the heater.
Of the heater and air conditioning system, and they probably got in through the ducts, which end up at the floor. You know,
right.
So where the heat comes out at the floor, they're going in there. Each of these little mice is probably jumping in there. Another mouse is handing him one of the kisses, and they're singing, hi-ho, hi-ho, it's all to worry
like
about. And they're carting these things away. You know,
right.
and they have probably stashed them in every nook and cranny.
Yeah.
This is going to be an ordeal.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
a pain.
This is going to be an ordeal.
And it's not something you can do easily.
And I'm glad it's not my car.
Yeah. You're going to have to go someplace and have it done. And it's going to cost you, I'd say, $100.
More money.
More?
$300.
Really?
Well, don't forget, the chocolate's melted now. So
yeah.
It's going to be everywhere. And it's drooped down and oozed and flowed into places that you don't even want to know about.
Well, we could just leave it.
You
No, you can't. It's disgusting.
Right.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do something.
Well, the best you can hope for is that somehow chocolate is combustible. The car catches fire. And if it does, don't try to put it out. Just run.
That's right.
Good luck, David.
Hey, appreciate it, guys.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
I certainly have.
Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Flau Blucher Fenalosa. Our web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Kira McKnight. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Crested Butte, Celery Root, Bamboo Shoot, Smoke Chucrut, Eye of Newt, Sauce Velute, and Kiwi Fruit, 21 Meal Salute is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster. This gets harder every week. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our Italian conflict resolution specialists are you and Mia Donagria. Our in-law hospitality provider is Emil Endicott. Our anger... Oh, no, I'm not doing that one. Our Russian chauffeurs pick off and drop off. Our directors of quality control are Les Thomas and Nomar Raymond. And the head of our Working Mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is you, Louis Dewey, known to the post-doctoral snowplow drivers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
And Happy New Year. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1201, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, the 10 features every new car should have.
Yeah, we made a list. There are some, you know, that you might expect, like stability control and the blind spot monitoring, you know.
Sure.
You know, but we also came up with an idea for, get this, the sorry button.
Yeah, for when you do something stupid.
Yeah, we're also thinking of taping one right on my brother's chest.
I could use that.
Check out our list of 10 features every new car should have and suggest your own, in fact, all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though canaries volunteer for coal mine duty whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.